The KM Football Podcast. Exclusive interviews with the biggest names in Kent football.
Hello everyone, I'm Matthew Panting and you're listening to the KM Football Podcast. Alongside me is Steve Turvett, and joining us in the studio this week is a penalty box poacher who's so well known to Kent football fans that we really only need to introduce him by his first name. He's an Essex boy whose career took off when he crossed the river and started banging in goals for Dartford. A deadline day move into the Championship with Norwich City changed his life, but it was a loan move to Gillingham which really made his name. Either side of a two-year spell at Coventry City, he made over 200 appearances for the Gills and scored 81 goals before moving on to AFC Wimbledon. His return to the county last season with Ebbsfleet was cut short by a knee injury, but he's now on the road to recovery. So we're delighted to welcome Cody McDonald to the podcast. Cody, good to see you.
How you doing?
Okay. Very well. Good to see you. Thanks for coming in. Might as well start with the present. How are you and what's the latest on the injury?
Yeah, not too bad. We're getting there. Obviously, it was a big dent to the situation at Ebbsfleet and that with the injury and that. But no, we're getting there. We're working hard in the gym and we're 4 months post-op now. So the deadline, they say, is between 7 and 9 months. So we've got anywhere between 3 to 5 months to go. But the signs over the last few weeks since we've been back in training are really positive. And yeah, it's looking good at the minute.
Is it one of those where you know that you're ahead of schedule at this stage, or you're behind schedule, or do you not know it at the moment?
Well, it was tough because we had a change of physios in the summer, which I think everyone sort of knows about. And when the new physio come in, he originally thought I was a little bit behind, which was fair enough at the time. But when we went back over the reports from the surgeon and that, because I had quite a lot of damage to my menisci, that, yeah, so we're basically on track now. So, and like I say, the signs over the last few weeks have been really positive, really been able to step it up in the gym and onto the bike now and swimming. So hopefully within the next couple of months, we'll be outside.
Without going into too much detail, but yep. What did you do basically to your knee and how did you do it as well?
Yeah, basically a ball got played over the top by Ash, the goalkeeper, and sort of went shoulder to shoulder with a centre half. And as I nudged the ball towards goal with the outside of my boot, the right leg got stuck in the ground. And yeah, it to be honest, at the time I didn't think it was that bad because I was able to play on. I think I played on for like 21 minutes or so. The initial thoughts were that my kneecap might have just popped out and popped straight back in again, so that was the hope at the time. But no, we went for the scan the next morning and straight away we got a call straight after just saying that I had ruptured my ACL, completely ruptured it, and damage to my medial and my lateral cartilage, which is obviously sounds not good, and it's obviously one of the worst injuries that you can get in football. And at this stage of my career, it isn't ideal, but there's so many medical people about now, and the rate that people come back at is getting better and better. So it's been a tough one so far. Like I say, we're 4 months in, but over the last few weeks, I've seen so much more positive things with the knee. So yeah, I'm really positive about coming back and hopefully before Christmas.
We've had one or two players in on the podcast already who've had serious injuries like that as well. Would you say it's more a mental problem? You know, the tougher bit is the mental side of it rather than getting your physical fitness back.
Yeah,
again?
I think so, because I'm obviously going to be in the gym for a long time. I don't think the fitness side of it's going to be a problem because I'm going to be battering the gym every day. I'm going to be out on grass for a good couple of months before I can actually go in and play. So hopefully I'll be going in good fitness. But yeah, everyone I've spoke to about the injury, they're all like, oh, you've got this, you can handle this and all that. And up until now, I found it all right, to be honest. I know it's going to be tough for the next 3 to 5 months in the gym, seeing all the lads out in the training ground. But the physio, Callum, has been superb with me so far. Very hands-on, which is nice because I know what I can and can't do at this stage, because I know what I'm like. I'd probably get too carried away if I was on my own. So it's nice to have someone there who I can guide off. And like I say, at the minute, it's all positive. But I suppose along the way, there's going to be good and bad days when I'm seeing the lads playing every week. But I think I've got it in me to do it.
I was going to say, assuming you're not injured, I guess every footballer would be quite happy to miss a bit of pre-season. But is there part of you looking out the window?
Well, I was joking with a gaffer the other day and I said, oh, I'm actually missing pre-season this year. Usually it's a bit like, oh no, pre-season, back to pre-season. But yeah, no, like I say, I'm at a bit of a sticky situation at the minute. I'm just up in the gym doing strengthening and that, and all the lads running around the field and that. So, but no, yeah, I'd give anything to be out there at the minute. Obviously, like we know, I'm getting bit older now, so I've got to try and make the most of it all I can. And at the minute, it's very frustrating. But like I say, I'll be working hard and getting myself in the best physical shape to hit the ground running when I do come back.
At the time that you did the injury, did you feel you were in quite good nick, quite good form?
Because obviously when I'd signed, I hadn't played for 6 months or so. I'd left Wimbledon, didn't have a club, kept myself ticking over in the gym, but that's not the same. It's tough to, when you haven't kicked a ball, to just hit the ground running. And my first couple of appearances, and when I actually went into training, I actually surprised myself a little bit, because you can start to doubt yourself a little bit. And I actually thought, yeah, no, I'm fine. But I didn't play as many games as I'd like. But yeah, I just felt like I was getting there. I'd scored 3 goals in 5 starts. I think that was my 5th start when I got injured. So, I mean, a lot of people since then have commented saying, oh, you was just starting to find your feet and just getting there and all that. So, yeah, I suppose I was just coming into a little bit of form. But that's football, you know. It's easy for people and me to say that now. It would have been nice to see how the season had panned out if I'd played. But like we say, this is football, and unfortunately things like that happen. But you just got to try and take the positives out of it, and that's what I'm trying to do at the minute.
Remember that game up at Chesterfield before it all went completely mad? You scored a goal which was sort of a typical Cody McDonald goal. I think you forced the error from the defender, yeah, and cut back in and scored, and that looked like your old self.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, that was one of the things that we'd worked on in training, was that we're going to get the balls down the channels, and I like running the channels. I don't mind working hard for the team. And yeah, like you say, I just got there and nicked it off the defender, and yeah, I suppose you could say that was sort of a trademark McDonald goal. It was a great feeling, but also mixed emotions that day. It was the craziest game I've ever been involved with, but on a whole, yeah, it was delighting to get that goal. But yeah, it's just, it was a crazy day.
What was it, strange being without a club for the first few months of the season?
Yeah, it was very strange. Obviously, when I'd left Wimbledon, I thought I did have something else lined up, but it took quite a while to leave Wimbledon to get things sorted and done, and to allow them to bring other players in, because they didn't want to just let me go without having people to cover or come in. Yeah, and then that didn't work. So, yeah, it was very frustrating, obviously, seeing the games every week. But it was also nice to have a little bit of a break, but yeah, I definitely started to miss it come the start of the season, and the hunger was really there to find the team sharpish, and thankfully Absolute gave me that chance.
So what had you been doing on a Saturday, going and watching other games or sat home with Jeff Stelling?
You know what, it was a bit of both really. I went to watch a couple of pals, really good friends with Stuart Nelson, went to watch him at Yeovil a few times, and I'm really into my cricket, which is obviously great at the minute with the England World Cup. But yeah, I played a couple of games of cricket, went and watched my pals, all my mates are into cricket and that, so yeah, it was sort of a bit of both. But yeah, like I say, every day when I was seeing the scores come through, and it was getting harder and harder, and then it was also getting harder and harder to find a team, because I had a few offers from up north, and I'm sort of in at that age now and that position where I don't want to be moving my family around, I don't want to be away from my family, so it was very limited to where I wanted to be, and that obviously makes it a lot harder to get the team that makes you happy and be playing your best stuff when you're at home.
Presumably those other factors, your family, your partner, your children, come into it more as you get older when you leave a club and you're thinking about where to go next.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I spent 2.5 years at Norwich, living in Norwich, but the twins and the eldest, they were young, they didn't know any different. And then we obviously went to Coventry for a couple of years, we lived there. But once they get, the eldest I think was 5, they need to get settled in school, and it's not fair to keep moving them about and that. And that's the reason why I come home from Coventry, really. And since then, why I've always wanted to stay local. So, yeah, that doesn't change my view on anything. I'm still the same now. I wouldn't move my family about, and I wouldn't leave them. So, yeah, thankfully, there's some good teams around the Essex area that have taken me and given me the chance.
In another life, could you have been a cricketer? Was there a chance you'd choose football or cricket, or which way to go?
No, I mean, I played at quite a decent standard cricket for club level with top league, so it's decent standard, but the step up from that to actual county cricket's a big step up, I think. But I suppose until you ever tried it, you'd never know. But I'd probably say no. Seeing the standard of cricket the other day, I definitely couldn't play at that level, but that was just unbelievable. But yes, it's a sport that I really enjoy. It's cricket, fishing and football, so they're the three main things that I like to do. So thankfully I've got a lot of people around me that do the same thing, so it makes it a lot easier.
Football always been a massive part of your life. You know, did you play at school and on Saturdays and Sundays when you were younger?
Yeah, I mean, it was there was no phones, iPads and that about then, so you had to go out and keep yourself busy on the streets. So it was football, cricket, and like I say, fishing at the local pond. So, but yeah, football was always the dream. You know, as a kid, most kids grow up wanting to be a professional footballer, and I was no different to that. And thankfully, a little bit later than others, I got the opportunity, and it's something that I'm really grateful for. And there's a lot of people along the way that I need to thank for that.
Because you had to do your apprenticeship with your local club for a few years, wasn't it? Witham Town.
Yeah.
At what point did you start really taking it seriously and think, hang on, I could make something out of this?
To be honest, I was at Witham Town for a good few years, obviously my local club. I went to Dartford, and I was still scaffolding at the time, and I never even envisaged being a professional footballer. I was just enjoying my football. I was doing well, but at no stage did I think I'm going to go and be a full-time footballer until about a week or two before it actually happened, and it all happened so quick. I had an agent approach me at Dartford and said that he's got a few clubs that were interested in me. Would I like to sign with him? Since that day, it's just gone up and down and up and down, but it's just been absolutely crazy. But like I say, I'm really thankful for the opportunity that a lot of people along the way have given me.
Being a part-time player in those early days and a scaffolder as your day job, silly question, but I imagine that's really hard work.
Yeah, it was tough. I mean, we'd just had the twins as well, got twin boys, Harrison and Mason. We'd just had them, and I think it was in the December the 16th we had them, and then I signed for Norwich on transfer deadline day, end of January. So I had twins, I had getting up at 5:30 in the morning, travelling to London, scaffolding, getting home 5-6 o'clock, dinner in the car to training every Tuesday, Thursday, playing on a Saturday. So yeah, it was tough, but I was still young then, full of beans, and I just took everything in my stride, and just thankfully, like I say, everything just fell into place from there.
Two things strike me from what you just said. One was, when you was at Witham, were you the best player there? Because I mean, you were there for 3 or 4 years.
We had a real good base of a team there, and it was we didn't play at the best level. I think it was Ryman Division 1 North at the time. We had a good manager, and Russell Tanner, Adam's brother, and it was all local lads, and we all knew each other, we all fought for each other, and no, I didn't stand out. We all just worked hard for each other. Yes, I scored a lot of goals, but that wasn't just down to my ability, it was the whole team that was allowing me to do that. Ollie Mers was playing at the time for Witham, that's where I met him. And then a couple of my good friends, Carn Hawes, there's a few brothers and that along the way that were all there, and we all stuck together. And it was a great time to be there. But like I say, I felt at the time I wanted to make a step up, and that's why I went to Dartford.
So what position was Ollie Mers, and what was your relationship like on the pitch?
He either played out wide or he was a striker. And then from then we joined a Sunday team together as well, and we all played a team called Valley Swifts, and I played up with them until I signed for Dartford. That was all local lads that sort of half of Witham went and played on a Sunday as well. So we was building a good relationship between us all, and yeah, he was a good player, but he did have a few injuries with his knee. He actually done what I've just done from a very young age, and I think 12 years on now, he's just had to have another operation on it because it wasn't quite done right at the time, and it's been giving him a bit of chip. But no, he was a decent player, to be fair to him.
Better finisher than you or not?
Not hard. Nah, to be fair, he was, like I say, he was a good footballer. People have probably seen him on Soccer Aid and that. He's definitely got ability, and he loves the game, so that always makes it easier and better.
I'll tell you what, his initiation song must have been decent, mustn't it? Yeah. Doing the bat then?
Yeah, but it's stuck going after him, eh? Imagine going after Ollie, yeah.
Was he singing around the dressing room then when you were sort of practically going? Any idea what was going
to
happen?
He was obviously the local pub, because after the Sunday games, we used to go back to the local pub, yeah. And on a Sunday night, they used to do a karaoke, and he used to get up, and I don't think he ever really took it seriously, but he'd get up and we'd all be like, oh, you're actually like decent, like you need to. And then it was from there, I think it was just after I signed for Norwich, actually, that he went on X Factor and obviously done well, and he's just gone up and up and up since then. So it's crazy for him as well at the minute, I think.
Did you fancy yourself singing in the pub on a Sunday night as well?
Not unless I'd had a few beers, but even then I think it wasn't that great.
We'll talk about Dartford in a minute. The second thing that struck me from what you just said a few minutes ago was the transfer deadline day.
Yeah.
I mean, we all sit at home on the sofa watching transfer deadline day. To actually been a part of it, and a move for you happening and going to Norwich on that day.
Yeah.
That must have been surreal.
It was crazy because obviously I was going from Dartford to Norwich. I think the jump up was 6 or 7 leagues to the Championship at the time. And obviously it's all just happening so quick. But we actually done the medical a couple of days before the transfer deadline day, and it didn't get announced till deadline day, but we'd signed it all and got it all done. But I think it's just something that they wanted to release on deadline day for a bit of fun. Maybe that happens more than what we think, but it was, like I say, it was crazy. It was one of them things that I had to adjust to, because obviously I used to be doing scaffolding every morning, and the load on the body training every day took a while to get used to. But yeah, obviously it was a great feeling, and just something that will live in the memory forever, really.
You're listening to the KM Football Podcast.
We had Tony Berman on the podcast probably a few months ago now, yep. And we talked to him about how Dartford ended up picking you up,
yep.
From Maldon Town, wasn't it, the club before. Yep. What are your recollections of that? He said you might have scored a hat-trick against Dartford or something, and that put you onto their radar.
What happened was I left Witham, and then I signed for, because the Witham Town manager, Russell Tanner, had gone to Maldon. So we went to, a few of us, to be fair, a few of the local lads went over to Maldon. And then we literally played, I think, two or three games. I think it's not a lot. And then the man who was putting a bit of money in it just left and disappeared, and no one ever heard anything. So didn't get paid. And they basically just said, like, we're not a club basically anymore. They just sort of stopped paying people. And then I didn't play for about 2 months, I think. And then it was Tony that contacted me. I can't remember if it was a Tuesday or a Thursday night. I went training for the first time, and he said, we'll just have a look, because you obviously haven't played for a while. And I actually ended up signing at the end of the first session. Now, I played in my first game on the Saturday, and I come on as a sub. I don't think I scored in the first game, but it was not long after that I started scoring a few goals. And my record at Dartford was pretty good. 19-17, I think, or the other way round. But I really enjoyed it there. It was really funny actually going there and playing, because I scaffolded their new stadium. So that was a bit, I remember at the time I was at Witham Town, and Witham Stadium's a little bit older, and I was like, oh, I'd love to play here one day. And then it obviously happened, and then obviously I've gone on to other things since then.
Because at that level, they were rising up through the leagues, and obviously the stadium was part of that.
Yeah.
They were quite an attractive proposition.
Oh, definitely, because we played against them a couple of times a season before at Witham, and you sort of go to Dartford and they're getting like 1,000 to 1,200 people in Ryman Division 1 North, and you're like, oh, this is brilliant. Like, we're playing in front of 50 people and a man with his dog sort of thing. So, when the opportunity came up, I jumped at the chance, and then just things just really escalated from there. And like I say, I owe a lot to Tony and Dartford as well, and it's always nice to go back there.
I think the ground's still holding, so the scaffolding was obviously decent at the time. Say 19 goals in 17 games. When you're in that sort of form,
yeah. Can
you describe the feeling?
It's one of them where you just think everything's going to go in, you know, and it doesn't. It doesn't. That's just the way football is. You're not going to score every chance, but it almost feels like that. You know, you get some go off the hip, and you get a shank left foot that just nibbles in the corner. It's just one of them things. And when your confidence is up, there's not really a better feeling than that. But we've all come across bad times as well playing, when you don't think you can hit a barn door, you know, when you're one-on-one and you're going through. But one thing that I've always tried to pride myself on is that no matter how many chances I miss, I'll keep getting in them positions. I'm not worried of missing chances. And I think that's helped me along the way, definitely, because there'd have been games along the way where I've probably missed three chances and then scored a harder one. So, yeah, that's just football again, like we say. But, yeah, at that moment of time, I was just full of confidence, and that set me up well to join Norwich. Obviously, I was making that big step up, but even in training, like a few comments from just the other lads that have obviously played championship level and sort of give you confidence as well, where they're like, oh, you're definitely like good enough and all that, and it just helps along the way. And yeah, it just, confidence is everything in football, and I think most players that have played at a decent standard or even lower standard will understand and say the same thing.
You mentioned the attendances at Dartford being so much more. What was it like then once you actually got out there and played in front of that crowd? I guess if you're scoring goals, actually being positive towards you, so it was probably quite a good experience.
It was great. Like I say, it was very different to what I'd been used to. But yeah, the Dartford fans, even now, they follow them everywhere. They've got a great fan base home and away. And I've been lucky along the way, actually, the teams that we've mentioned that I've played for, every single team has always had great away following as well as home support. So I've been very lucky that the teams I've played for have always travelled very well.
Was it a shock playing in front of a crowd straight away? You know, having played in front of, you know,
what, at Norwich or at Dartford?
No, at Dartford, when, you know, you started off with a man and a dog, effectively.
Yeah, no, I don't think it was really. I think it all kind of felt kind of natural, you know. It's just, it And now, more so, you sort of realise that when you're playing, you just, everything's just a blur, really, around you. It's obviously just you and the other players out on the pitch and the referee. But, yeah, I mean, it's great playing in front of a crowd when you score the goals and you take it all in. But when you're actually in the heat of the moment of the game, it's hard to... It's just you and them players out there, so it doesn't really affect your confidence or anything like that at the time.
You've scored a lot of your goals over the years from inside the box, as Matt said at the top of the podcast. How much of that is something that you work on in training, you know, work on your finishing, and how much is just you and just your natural ability?
I think it's a bit of both. I think some players have either got that or they haven't. I mean, a lot of players have made a career, i.e. myself, out of just being right place, right time. Maybe early doors, my all-round game wasn't as good as what it could have been, but because I scored goals, that'll always take you a long way. But you can't just take that for granted and think you've made it, done it there and then. You've still got to work hard on it. And even now at 33, all right, not at the minute while I'm injured, but the back end of last season, I'd always stay behind training, do extra finishing. You can never do too much finishing. And even if you're hitting the back of the net in training, that takes you a long way in going into games as well. So just repetition of hitting the net, whether there's a keeper or not. Actually, it's harder without a keeper sometimes because you're trying to put it so far in the corners, you're missing and everything. But yeah, something that I pride myself on, my finishing. And yeah, thankfully, it's took me a long way.
For young lads and girls who like scoring goals in the playground or for their, you know, local team, what makes a good centre forward? You know, what qualities do you really need to make a go?
I think the game's changed a lot. I mean, obviously, like we're saying, when I was at Dartford and even early doors at Norwich and my first spell at Gillingham, my game was about making runs off a big target man, i.e. Akin Fenwa, Keds. But the game's changed now, even more so my last year at Gillingham and my first year at Wimbledon. I was playing up front on my own and it was something that I had to really work on because it wasn't natural for me. But it's something that I added. I knew I had to work hard on it because that's the way the game was going at the time. And if I wasn't able to play up front on my own, then I probably wasn't going to play. So I worked hard on that and, yeah, it improved. So you could never work too hard in training and working on things. Like you see Ronaldo and Messi, I hear stories of Ronaldo out on the training ground an hour after other people and he's the best player in the world. So, yeah, you just got to work on every aspect of your game and that's something that I do. And even more so now where I'm getting a bit older, maybe I'm not as quick as I was 2 or 3 years ago. So, yeah, you have to bring that side of your game in. And I think I did. I might not be the best of it, but it's something that I added and it just gives that extra dimension for a manager or an option for him to either play me up front on my own or with a two.
Was you always a hard worker in training or was that something that clicked
I still pride myself on that now in training. I like to work hard because you never know when it's going to end. And you don't want to let your teammates down. So even in training, work hard. You're only out there for an hour and a half maximum. So we've got an easy job. It's an enjoyable job, so make the most of it while you can and work hard while you're there. So it can be a bit frustrating sometimes because you come across people that don't put it in training and it's very frustrating, but they soon get told by some of the senior players. But yeah, like I say, I don't like letting my teammates down. I'll always, as long as I can work hard, I'll still keep playing football.
You spoke about being a natural finisher as well, it's hard work needed to do it. But when you're on the training ground, who've been the coaches that have really impressed you in terms of they've helped your game, moved it on another level, got you to try and do it this way,
that way? I think it's hard to point out one in particular because each manager and each coach has their own different traits and most coaches have always, you come across different drills and everything. So each coach teaches you different things. But yeah, that's a hard question to answer. But I've come across some great managers, great coaches. One of the best that I come across was Paul Lambert. And even to this day, people go, oh, he never give you a chance and all that. And I was like, no, maybe I didn't get the chance that I felt I should have got at the time. But he was an unbelievable manager. His training sessions were brilliant. So, yeah, him and Culverhouse, I think early doors in my career, really set the tone for it. But like I say, all the other managers that I've come across have also added different parts to my game. And Neil Ardley was great at Wimbledon, actually. Obviously, when I said I needed to change my game to being able to hold the ball up a bit more, we used to stay out and do extras with him. We used to get the goalkeeping coach on the pads up me up my bum, like trying to hold them off and that. And it's great that you can learn different things off different coaches and try and put it all together and try and make it all happen.
So it sounds like they were very much managers that went out on the training ground and worked with you out
there.
Yeah,
every manager, to be fair, that I've come across have all been quite hands-on in training. Yeah, like I say, they've all taken the training sessions and that.
That line about not knowing how long it's going to last in terms of your career, is that something you're more mindful of since the injury?
Yeah, to be honest, since you don't actually think that something like that will happen to you. Obviously, I was out of contract last season at Ebbsfleet, and I'll be honest, the first thing I thought when I went down injured was, I'm out of contract. Family, everything, that's the first thing I thought of. And then when I got up, I thought, oh, it's not that bad. And then obviously, when you find out what has happened, the worry does kick in a little bit, because like I say, I'm very family orientated and they come first, really. So, yeah, that played in the back of my mind, but special mention has to go to Ebbsfleet, because knowing that I might not play again till Christmas, they've given me another year's contract, which I think's a credit to them. The manager and Ian Hendon giving me the opportunity, and that's why I'm going to work hard and hopefully pay back what the faith that they've shown in me.
Did that conversation come quite quickly that they assured you that they wanted you to stay at the club?
No, not really. So it was on my mind for a little while. I was looking at different avenues and different options, but fair play to Gary, just out of the blue one day he phoned me. He said, I've had a chat with director and he said, we feel that we owe it to you. You've basically done the injury playing for us. You've been good, you're a good pro, you come in, you work hard every day. We feel that we owe it to you to give the opportunity to get back playing and back playing how you was. So I owe a lot of credit to them at this stage in my career for giving me the opportunity, because if they didn't, I don't know, I probably wouldn't play again. So I owe a lot to them.
Yeah, Ebbsfleet fans will be pleased to know that Cody sat across the desk from us in his Ebbsfleet training top. So I guess the focus is not getting back as soon as you can, but being right to come back.
I think that's the thing with this injury. Obviously, you can rush it. I mean, with a lot of injuries, you can come back and play on with a little bit of a niggle and that. But obviously, with it being the ACL, you've got to make sure that it's strong enough to handle the athleticism that you have to be able to do on the pitch. So, yeah, it's going to be a bit of a slow process. But like I say, we're 4 months post-op now, and they say 7 to 9. So, hopefully we're halfway through, and like I say, if we keep continuing like it is now, hopefully I can get back a little bit sooner. But like we say, we can't rush it. We just got to make sure it's right, because the last thing I want to do is come back and play with a little bit of a hindrance and it's not quite right and you're letting the team down. So yeah, I won't be playing again until it's right, that's for sure.
I mean, there's a major transition at Ebbsfleet at the moment. Most of the players you played with last season have moved on to other clubs, and Gary Hill's rebuilding the squad. What's it like being a player within the club at the moment?
Yes, to be fair, like you say, he's made a lot of changes. I think it's quite well documented that a lot's gone on at the club, and Gary felt that it was right to change personnel at the club, and that's how he feels best to go forward. So you've got to commend him for that. And yeah, like we say, I think personnel that he's brought in so far, very physical, very big, a lot of experience, and I think he's very happy with where we're at the minute. Obviously, he needs to add a few more. I think that's fair to say. I think we've got 12 or 13 at the minute. So, but the kids have come in and done quite well in pre-season, helped with the numbers and that as well, and they haven't let the quality of the football go down. So, again, that's a good sign for the club with the youngsters that are about. But, yeah, I mean, everything's looking bright at the minute, that's for sure.
For the latest reaction and reports from the games that matter, visit our website at kentonline.co.uk.
Just to jump back in time to ask about going into Norwich, we touched on it, but they were a Championship club when you went up there. When you walked into the place for the first time, what was that like?
Well, what a lot of people don't actually know is when I was actually at Dartford, a week or two before I actually signed for them, I went and done 2 or 3 days trial. So I went and trained with them, had a couple of days off from work, went and trained. And I didn't feel out of place. The manager pulled me, said, you've done really well and that. So that gives you confidence, but yeah, to just go from, like I say, Dartford, which was unbelievable for a non-league outfit, to step up to Norwich, which the fan base was just unreal. The facilities, everything was just crazy. So it was something that I was really excited about, obviously really happy about everything that had happened. And it was just, yeah, like I say, it was just a real whirlwind time, but it was just taking everything in along the way. And it, soon become reality after a few weeks when I started playing, that there was a lot of pressure on you to perform as well. There was a lot more pressure at that level, obviously, to perform and get results than what there is in the non-league. So that was something that I had to quickly deal with as well. But it was a great time of my career, really.
You scored, I think, within 15 minutes of your debut. Yeah. That must have been the most amazing moment.
I think that just settled the nerves, if I had any, because like we touched on just a little while ago, you sort of blank everything out. But once you go from playing in front of 1,000 people to 25,000 people, and you're sitting on the bench, you can take that in when you're sitting on the bench when you're not playing. So when you're told you're going to come on, you're sort of looking around and you're like, oh, you're excited, but there's this little butterflies in your stomach. But as soon as I went on the pitch, everything just blanked out, and it's I've said it a few times now, I went through one-on-one. It was against Cardiff, like you say, after about 15 minutes, and it was a really important game because we was obviously battling relegation, and it just felt like a film. Everything just went slow motion. It was so surreal. It was just, when I think back on it, everything just blurred out. It was just me and the goalkeeper, and it was actually like I was in a film. It was just really crazy. And then when the ball went in the net, it felt like everything just went crazy, and it was just an unbelievable feeling. And I think that really settled the nerves, like we say, that if there was any. And yeah, it sort of set the tone for me a little bit, because like after the game and that, the boys were obviously giving you confidence, and yeah, it was just a crazy
moment like
time.
That, I suppose it makes you feel that you belong.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say, because obviously you could doubt yourself, but like you say, I had them couple of days training leading up to actually signing for them, where I didn't feel out of place, or I felt I'd done quite well. And yeah, it was just a very special occasion with my family being there. Yeah, it was crazy, and my phone was just going mental. But yeah, it was just something that I got a taste of, and I wanted to taste that more and more and more. So I sort of got obsessed with it after that. Sometimes when you get obsessed with things and it don't happen, you can start to doubt yourself again. But yeah, just an absolute crazy time of my career.
You talked about big occasions. You played in the derby against Ipswich. Now,
yeah,
that's a real fierce rivalry, yeah. I know, from being up in that area. What was it like to have a taste of that?
That was crazy as well, really, because growing up as a kid, I used to go and watch Ipswich a lot, only living like 40 minutes from there. Played for this Centre of Excellence for 2 or 3 years. So I probably watched over 200 games when I was younger of Ipswich, when they were in the Premier League, the season when they done really well, when they come fifth or fourth in the league. Adam Tanner scored the goal away at Anfield. I used to go and watch them every week then, so that was a little bit. My uncle used to take me, was at the game, obviously he's Ipswich supporter, and I'm there playing against his team. So it was mixed emotions for him as well. But yeah, it was crazy. The atmosphere was unbelievable. Like you say, it's quite a fierce atmosphere. They're very, I think we turned up on the coach and we was getting bottles and stones at the coaches before the game. But yeah, we didn't win that game. I think we lost 3-2, I think it was. But it was a tight game. But yeah, an enjoyable occasion. But obviously the result weren't the right one.
Mm. Paul Lambert, who you mentioned already, took over from Brian Gunn 2 games into the League One season. What was he like to work for, and how was that, you know, being at a big club and having a change of manager?
Yeah, it was a big change, really, because Brian Gunn was very friendly with the players, but there was a boundary. He knew when he could have a laugh and couldn't. You know, when we went to work, we went to work, and he was a lovely man to be around. And then Paul Lambert come in, and it was very different. It was a lot more stricter around the place. The dietary stuff that we used to have, a lot of it got stopped, and we could only eat certain things and that. But the way he went about it, it definitely got the performances on the pitch, because obviously we went on to win the league that season. It was an unbelievable season. Like I said, he's a great man, manager, good manager. But yeah, they were two very different people, but good in their own right. So
I suppose you have to adjust quite quickly if someone's got a very different style.
Yeah.
You've been used to doing things one way, and hang on, Paul Lambert is expecting me to behave this way. I'd better fall into line.
Yeah, well, I think it was a big learning curve for me, because Brian Gunn gave me the opportunity. He was the manager at Norwich at the time, and he was actually the scout who scouted me at Dartford. And then Glenn Roeder got sacked and he got the job, so he knew what I could do, and I played a lot of games under him. But then when Paul Lambert come in, I didn't play for the first couple of games, and you're thinking, oh, like, am I going to play under him? But since then, it's fairly evident that everyone gets a clean slate when a new manager comes in. So I think that's just what happened at the time. And at the time, I think we had Wes Houlihan, Chris Martin, Grant Holt, all scored 20 to 25 goals that season, so it was very hard to break into that team. But I also understood that I needed to play, needed to put myself in the shop window. But I was always the first port of call to come on, which was quite a Solskjaer sort of thing. Like if we was losing, or I'd always come on. But yeah, I possibly didn't start as many games under Paul as I'd have liked to. But that's just football again. Like you say, it was all so surreal that I was still playing for Norwich that it really didn't bother me at the time. But I think if that was this stage of my career, sitting on the bench, it wouldn't be ideal at this stage of my career. But no, a very enjoyable season, the League One season, obviously winning the league. And he obviously went on to manage in the Premier League in it as well. So
I just wonder, and this applies not only to your time at Norwich but other clubs, when you're on the bench, and as you say, you're likely to be the manager's first change if things aren't going right, is there part of you that almost hopes they're not going right so that you are going to get your opportunity? What's your mindset as a sub?
I suppose for some people it does, but I think, well, I am a team player. I'd much rather win every week. And I know people do say that, and I suppose a lot of people take that as a pinch of salt, but I am generally not selfish in that manner. I'd rather win games and be successful in that manner rather than lose 3-1 and score. For instance, the 7-1 against Colchester. We lost 7-1 and I scored the one goal, but you'd have changed that all day long, you know, because obviously what happened to Brian after that. But yeah, no, I mean, there probably is selfish players along the way that I've probably played with, or other people have noticed that would think that, but that wasn't in my manner, no.
You mentioned the 7-1 against Colchester. You was in the dressing room, obviously, when it happened. What on earth was that like? I mean, have you ever experienced anything like it?
It was so tough because we'd gone into the season, obviously we'd just been relegated from the Championship. We was favourites to get promoted. You're playing against a localish team not far down the road, Colchester. Everyone's expecting you to get off to a great start, and at half time you're 5-0 down, and it's tough to take. That was the angriest I'd seen Brian actually at half time. He went off the rail, to be fair to him. It was a hot day. I remember there was on the table, there was sun creams, and that got launched off the table all over everyone's suit. But he was well within his right. He picked the team that he felt was the right team on the day. But yeah, that was just a weird game, and obviously it was the start of the end for Brian, that game, really, because we obviously went on Tuesday night away at Yeovil in the League Cup, 1-4-0, but the board had obviously already made their mind up that he wasn't the right man to take us forward. So that was tough as well, because obviously I had a lot of respect for him as a man for giving me the chance. And the day when he come in and told us the morning after, we was on a massive high, and then the next morning we're all down for breakfast. And he's called a meeting and we're like, oh, what's going on here? And then that's the first time I'd experienced a manager coming in and saying that just been sacked, boys. And he was a Norwich man through and through, as everyone knows. And he was getting a little bit upset, and it was hard to see and hard to take him. But like we said before, unfortunately, this does happen in football, and you just got to try and put them feelings aside a little bit, although it's not nice, and just try and concentrate on performing well for the club.
I was going to say, I mean, managers come and go in football. I guess it's a fact of the industry. Yeah. But do the players take it personally when a manager gets the sack like that?
I think some players are different. A lot of players possibly get closer to the managers than others. And obviously, when managers do get sacked, if you're not quite having the manager, or the respect isn't there, then maybe some people not enjoy seeing the manager go, but can accept the fact that it's happened. But it's never nice seeing. I mean, I don't know how many times this happened over my time now, but it's a hard one to take when you're sitting there and you understand that it's their livelihood as well, and they've got families and they've got people to feed and that, you know. So it's hard to take, but like I say, it's the industry we're in. And yeah, you just got to try and put your feelings aside and just get on with your job, although it's hard. But yeah, it's not nice to see, but like we've said, unfortunately it does happen.
It was an amazing turnaround, wasn't it? Because Norwich then went on to win the league as well that year. But the following season, you end up going on loan to Gillingham.
Yep.
How did that move come about?
I'd obviously, to be fair to Paul Lambert, he'd phoned me in the summer and said, we was going to Germany, I think. And he said he was looking to sign Simeon Jackson, who was at Gillingham at the time. And I said, OK, that's fine. He said, would you be willing to go on loan there? And I said, well, yeah, I just want to play at the end of the day. If you're basically telling me that I'm not really in your plans and I'm not going to play, then yeah, of course, I want to be playing football every week. And it also gave me the opportunity to move back home, which was obviously in the back of my head as well. But it wasn't something that I necessarily really pushed for, because obviously I wanted to be involved in a Championship. And it was quite nice in the end, because we went back to pre-season and Paul Lambert actually pulled me again. Maybe he'd thought about the way that conversation had gone, and he'd said, look, if we don't get the Simeon Jackson deal done, it's not that you're not going to play, it's just that we do want to sign him, and one of the things that might help us along the way is if they get another striker. And you're not going to play every week, but you're not going to be completely binned. You'll be in around the team and that still. So, but no, they come to an agreement with Simeon, and we was in Germany at the time. I think we was a few days into pre-season training, and I flew home and went and met Andy Hessenthaler and Ian Hendon at the time. And yeah, we got the deal done. And to be fair, that was an unbelievable season for me. Obviously, Norwich, who I was still contracted to, got promoted to the Premier League. And I went to Gillingham and had a good personal season. But we just missed out on the last day, which was obviously a bit of a gutter. But I don't think there was things leading up to the playoffs where I'm not sure I would have been able to play in the playoffs anyway. So that would have been a bit selfish for me to not want them to get promoted, but I wouldn't have been able to play. So it was a bit like, oh. But yeah, that was just so gutting, coming so close and just not quite making it. But it was an unbelievable season on a personal note for me, which sort of set me up with my moves to Gillingham in the future.
Was that contract-wise, the playoffs?
Yeah, I think the if you didn't do it after a certain time, because I think we was around mid-table for a lot of the time, and maybe we wasn't thinking we'd make the playoffs, so I don't think they put it in the contract to say that I'll be... Because obviously there was a chance that Norwich would have gone to playoffs as well, and I'd have had to go back there. But yeah, unfortunately, we missed out on the last day, and I think Norwich got promoted a couple of games before the end, so... Yeah, that was mixed emotions, because obviously gutted for Gillingham that we couldn't get in the playoffs, but then obviously a bit of joy in the fact that the club that I was contracted to were going to be playing in the Premier League the following season.
It just seemed like you and Gillingham were a good fit for each other. Why do you think it's been such a good club for you over the years?
I think a lot of the factor is definitely that I'm at home. I'm living at home. Like I've touched on before, moving away and being away from family is hard. The 5 seasons that I've had at Gillingham, I've lived in my hometown, Witham, and just travelled because it's not too far. Yeah, and I've always found myself playing 9 times out of 10. So whoever the manager is at the time always felt like that they were having me. They had a lot of confidence in me, and I just felt like I was going to play every week. And when you're not playing every week, it can, I don't know, you just can't really get a rhythm. At Gillingham, I played, like I say, most weeks, and I think that definitely helped with confidence and a run of games to be able to put some goals together.
What are the moments from your time with the Jewels that stand out when you look back?
The promotion from League Two. I only spent, I think it was 5 or 6 weeks on loan prior to signing a permanent from Coventry. Obviously, the missing out on the playoffs where we were top two for so long, and then missing out on the playoffs completely under Justin. That was tough to take. But just overall, it's just a great club. The fans are unbelievable. It's well run, very stable. Everything behind the scenes is done properly. And like I say, I was at home with my family every night, and just, they come to watch me every game, and that just gives you that little extra buzz as well when your family are there watching you. Yeah, it's just, like I say, it's always brought the best out of me playing there. And when I look back on my career at the end of it, it will definitely be the club where I say that I played my best football up to date.
You scored so many goals for Jules. Are you aware at the time is that the pressure's on you? You know, everyone looks to the goal scoring the team, or was that something you thrived off the adulation you get from scoring those goals?
I think, like we did touch on a little while ago, it was confidence based, and I just knew that I'd obviously done well for Gillingham, and every time I put the shirt on, I just felt confident going out. And I suppose a lot of the 4 years, a lot of the play was built around me and the other striker that I was either playing with, Kedwell or Akinfenwa. That was a big part of the team's success at the time. So I think that's something that you got to thrive on. You got to take a bit of the heat at the time. And yeah, like I say, it just, everything just sort of fell into place every time there. And it was just, it was an unbelievable time in my career. And when I look back on it now, I regret leaving there. But at the time, like we've touched on, family comes first, and they only offered me a year contract. If they'd offered me reduced money, which was not overly a problem, but I just wanted the 2 years, the bit of security at the age of 30 to take me to 32, would have gone a long way getting that extra year. But they only offered me the year at the time, and in hindsight now, I probably could have took it because I only spent a year at Wimbledon anyway. So, but that's football. You learn by your mistakes sometimes, and that's something that I'll take on board for the future.
At the time when you go to leave Jules and you're thinking, do I stay, do I go?
Yeah.
How long does that decision process, when does it start in your head? Are you thinking 6 months before your contract's up, what am I going to do in the summer? Or?
No, not really, because I always felt I had a decent enough relationship with the club and the chairman and the manager at the time that I always thought that we'd get something done, even though I'd never gone into the manager and said, look, what's happening next season? Because I felt like I was playing well at the time. I knew I had other options just in case nothing happened. But yeah, I never really processed it until the season had finished, really. And it was a few days after the last game of the season. We just stayed up away at Northampton and I had the meeting with the manager at the time. And he just said, yeah, we want to keep you. The money isn't quite there that you're on, but so he said the money that they were offering, and he said, but there's just for a year's contract. And I said, well, if you make that two, the money's not a problem, make that two and I'll sign the deal. And just never got to that agreement. They didn't offer the two, but like I say, there's nothing bad against the club. They just felt that was the right direction to go. I felt it was the right time to go in my career, as in the fact that I'd been offered 2 years elsewhere on less money than what I'd been offered on Gillingham. I'll just add that in. So it wasn't like I went for the money. But yeah, it was just it was a sad moment, because I knew deep down that I'll probably never play for them again. But yeah, like I say, that's football. It's just another stumbling block along the thing, and it's trying to put all the pieces together. But when I look back on it, I definitely played my best football at Gillingham and enjoyed my time there thoroughly. It's a great club.
Two things strike me from what you just said as well is, do you think it was down to your age that you was only given 1 year?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's maybe just something that the manager had maybe said, like, he's 30, like, you don't want to be handing out 2 year contracts, which is, I get that, it's football at the end of the day, and a lot of players get to a certain age and they maybe do start to deteriorate, and maybe they thought that was the case with me. So that I didn't take that to heart or personally. I was obviously gutted at the time, because it would have been ideal to just sign another 2 years there and stay there, because obviously I had a little target in my head. I wanted to get the 100 goals as well, which was obviously would have been a good personal note. But yeah, it weren't meant to be. They felt that was the right avenue to go. And like I say, we move on. But it's a club that I still, to this day, still always look out for their results. Still speak to a few people there. So yeah, it's a great club to be involved with.
And did you have an agent who was doing your... negotiating
yeah.
on your behalf then? Or
yeah, yeah.
How involved are you in that?
Yeah, so basically, to be fair, I had such a good relationship with the manager and Paul Scully at the time that I just spoke to them directly a lot of the times. Even the money side of it, like I say, they'd said the money that was there and I sort of half agreed to it and then just said, look, just make that 2 years and we'll get it done. But it was something that we couldn't really agree on, which was, like I say, it was a shame. But yeah, my agents obviously put my name out elsewhere and got the deal done to Wimbledon. So I was excited about the new challenge at the time, but looking back on it, it didn't quite work out there. So it was a shame that if I'd have signed the extra year at Gillingham at the time and done well, then it might have led to another year or two along the way. But like I say, it's football, you make decisions along the way. But at the time, the main factor was the family, that I needed that 2 year security. So so we didn't come across the situation that I found myself in at the end of last season. So I think my decision was justified at the time, but maybe after the year that I left at Wimbledon, you look back at it and think, if or but. But like I say, it's football, we learn by our mistakes, and that's just the way it goes.
You're listening to the KM Football Podcast.
Some of the enduring images of Cody McDonald at Gillingham are not you on your own doing anything, but being half of a partnership. You're part of some cracking strike partnerships.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Tell us about playing with Bayo, first of all.
That was just so easy, and it was something that we did work on in training, but we didn't have to initially. It just happened. And it was just one of them where I'd go up for the headers, flick it into him, he'd get hold of it, hook it over his shoulder and I'd run on. And it just felt like that's how most of my goals come there, or him flicking it on. He was just... because he's such a handful, and I found the same when I played with Keds as well, obviously, they're such handfuls that the defenders are so worried about them too that they forget about me, and that allows me to go off and do my own little thing. And they're the main reason why I've scored a lot of my goals in my career, especially obviously Akinfenwa, the two seasons that I played up front with him. I think I scored 25 and 17 in them two seasons. So I'd probably say half of them goals were down to the fact that he was either flicking on for me or creating for me, or the fact that defenders were worried about him that they just forgot about me. So they were just both a joy to play with, and easy, really. It just both partnerships just clicked.
You probably didn't play as many games with Keds as Bayo, did you? But it was just the double act that seemed to give defences a lot of problems.
At the time, it was hard with being Keds because under Peter Taylor, he used to like to go with a three up front, but it was more like a 4-5-1, a little bit more defensive. But Keds would be the main striker, and I'd either play out on the right or the left, and I'd find myself a bit more defensive, and it was harder to sort of... But yeah, when we did play out front together, we always seemed to do well, but it just didn't happen as much as what it did with Akinfenwa. But both great players. Joy to play with.
And when you've got a good partnership like that, is it important that you get along off the pitch, that you're mates as well, or is it something that you can just switch on when you go over the white line, you go to work?
I wouldn't know, to be honest, because I hadn't fallen out with either of them, and I haven't...
You wouldn't fall out with Bayo, would you?
No, all kids. I haven't fell out with a lot of my teammates along the way. I like an easy life. I like to go in, do my work, go home. And there's probably only 10 people that I've come across in my career that I'll probably call friends after football. And that's not in a harsh way, but people just come and go so quickly in football that it's hard to build good friendships with them. So, yeah, I can't honestly say that I've fallen out with anyone in any of the teams I've played with. So,
but it was just a natural chemistry. They were people that you happened to get on with and you played well together.
I just think that with both of them, we was never a threat to each other. I was never going to play in front of Keds, or I was never going to play in... When we did play, we was together, so we had to be a partnership. We didn't have nothing against each other. But they're two such likeable guys as well that you... can't really fall out of them when you don't want to, like we just said.
I mean, they're two such great target men as well in the team, but their characters, were they quite similar character-wise, or were they quite different personalities?
Pretty similar. They're not the type of guys that you want to mess about with too much off the pitch and annoy. They'll tell you if you're not putting it in or if they're not happy with something, but like I say, I never had that relationship with them that we ever doubted each other or anything like that. So two really likeable family guys that have gone on to do unbelievable things in the game. So you've got to respect them for that. And off the pitch, they're great people to be around. So I can't say anything negative about either of them because they're great people.
Doing a little bit of research for the podcast, I was looking back at clips of your goals, particularly at Jill's, and I'm surprised maybe what a high percentage of them were headers.
Yeah.
You're under 6 foot. So how much pride do you take from that you've been able to do so well aerially?
Yeah, a lot of people say that. I think it's more the right place, right time sort of thing. Like a lot of them probably ain't getting up and beating the big centre half, you know, it's sort of being in the right place. But yeah, I think the first season that I had at Chillingham, the 25 goals, I think 30 or 40% of them were headers, which is obviously... great for someone of my stature to have. Yeah, it's just, I don't know, I've just always had that little ability to rise quite well and just get my head on it and not worried about taking a whack or anything. So I think that might be a big part of it as well, not worried about sticking your head where it hurts. I think a couple of times I've got my head on things and been kicked in the head and that, and elbows and headbutts and that, but it's just, like I said, it's part of the game. You just got to get on with it. But yeah, I do take a lot of pride in scoring goals with my head. It's obviously a nice feeling. Any goal you score, but for a man of my size to score headers is a nice feeling.
That was going to be my next question, actually. That element of bravery, being prepared to put yourself in where the keeper's flying out or the defenders, you know, throwing themselves at the set piece, trying to clear it away. Yeah. And again, you've always been prepared to kind of get in there and score the scruffy goals as well.
Yeah, I think, again, it's one of them things you've either got or you haven't. Like I said, I just want to do well for the team. So if it means taking a cut to the eyebrow or back of the head, touch wood, I've never had any real serious injuries in that respect, so I've never had any reason to pull out, really. And it's just something that if it's going to score me 5 extra goals a season, then I'll do it. So yeah, it's worked well for me so far, so I ain't prepared to stop doing it.
How much thought do you give to your goal celebrations? Is it something that do you ever plan a celebration?
No, I don't, to be honest. It's just I've got some bad ones, to be fair. But yeah, I just think it's heat of the moment. However, the game situation, I mean, I scored a couple of late goals where you just go and jump in the crowd and get yellow cards and that, but that's just heat of the moment. I haven't got a celebration that I sort of stick to as a given, but nah, it's just, I do whatever it is at the time.
How did you celebrate your first pro goal then, when you scored for Norwich?
I just slid to my knees and just, my hands and my head, my head in my hands. It was just an unbelievable feeling that I think there's still... images of it now, me just on the floor on my knees, just like, wow, this is actually happening. So that was a great feeling, unbelievable feeling. Yeah,
talk briefly about the move to Coventry, which again you touched on, but how did you find it moving up there, you know, not just playing for the club, but a different area and being further away from home?
Yeah, I think that was the most difficult part of my career that I found, because even though we lived in Norwich, it was only an hour and 20 minutes from home, so we could always nip home. We'd nip home after a Saturday. We still spent quite a lot of time at home. The kids weren't settled at school, so we could go home for the odd night here and there, and it never really felt like we was away too much. But when we went to Coventry, it's like 2.5 hours away. You're living there and that's it, and we very rarely got to go home. But I think that's why I struggled a little bit, because not only my wife and my kids am I close to, I'm close to all of my family, so to be away from them was tough.
Do you feel a bit isolated?
Yeah, a little bit. Although you meet people and you get friendly with your teammates and on and off the pitch, like we was going doing things. But I like people coming to watch me as well. That gives me that little buzz. I want to do well for them. And I never really had that at Coventry. It was only really Joe and the boys would come and watch. The boys were babies, so they didn't really understand. And it was a tough time of my career. And that's why when the chance come back to sign for Gillingham on a permanent, I just jumped at the opportunity.
Maybe one thing that we in the press don't consider enough, that obviously players move around from club to club and you'll get a player moving up north and then overseas and then back closer to home. But it's your family, you know, if you're moving somewhere, you're either leaving the family at home, yeah, a long way away, or you're uprooting everyone, they've got to come with you. So it's your whole life gets in the car and goes.
Yeah, it does, yeah. And that is, I've come across a lot of players that are prepared to do that in the game and a lot of players that ain't. And I'm one of them that ain't, because my boys are at a nice age now where they play football themselves in the evenings and I like to go and watch them. And if I was away from them, I wouldn't be able to do that. So I respect the people that can do it, because I think it puts a lot of strain on the family when you're away and that. But like I say, it's something that I could never really deal with and I didn't really want to do. So I just, like I say, I've been lucky that I've always played at clubs in and around the Essex area where I've lived at home.
The boys knocking in goals, have they got a little bit of dad's sort of traits about them?
Yeah, they just enjoy it so much. That's the main thing from my point of view. They really enjoy it. They work hard. I say to them every weekend before they have a game, look, boys, I'm not going to criticise what you're doing, that, but as long as you're enjoying it and you're working hard, you're not going to play well every week. I don't at my level. So as long as you're giving it 100% and you're giving it everything, I said, that's all you can do. And they enjoy it. They're at home every night, cricket or football in the garden. I haven't got them into fishing yet. They're not set on that. But I enjoy watching them. They're into cricket as well. I enjoy watching them play cricket and football. And they're so dedicated to it. For young kids, they spend hours out in the garden. And who knows, it might lead to something in the future. But there's no pressure on them from me. If they wanted to do it or didn't, if they come home and said to me they wanted to do something else, that's fine. I'll support them in whatever they want to do. But it is nice from a footballing dad to be able to go and watch your boys play football, because I think when they were young, I always dreamt of that as well. So that's nice.
Just to bring it back to Ebbsfleet before we finish the podcast.
Yep.
How do you see this season going? Obviously, there's still some work to be done, players to be brought in, and it's a work in progress. But, I mean, you've got a feel for the club, and obviously you've worked with Ian Hendon before, and you know Gary well. How do you see this season going?
Well, I think he's putting a good team together. He's gone with the physical, a lot of experience in the dressing room. I was talking to the gaffer the other day and he was saying about the lads that have won trophies or been promoted from this level. He's gone down that route and I don't think that's a bad thing. I really don't. It's a real tough league to get out of, and I think you've got to give yourself every opportunity, and I think the manager's going the right way about it. Obviously, it's going to be tough and it's going to be a long season. We're going to have a smallish squad, which I think he's come out and said that he only wants a certain amount of numbers. But the personnel that he's brought in so far, I've been very impressed with, that I've seen from the windows in the gym and the games that they've played in. So, yeah, I'm a very positive person anyway. Even if we, in back of my head, I thought I wasn't sure, I'd always be positive around the dressing room and make people believe that we can go and do something special. And I think that's what you've got to aim to do at the start of a season, because if you don't, then what's the point in taking part? So hopefully we can get through these next pre-season games without any injuries and get some good minutes in the boys and some work in the legs and set them up nicely for the start of the season. And then who knows, I suppose we'll know a bit more after the first month or two of the season. But I think it's hard to tell at the minute, but I think the way the manager's gone about it so far is the right way to go, and him and Hendo they treat the boys with a lot of respect, and I think they're getting a lot of respect back as well, which I think is a great balance at a football club, because it must be so hard for a manager to understand each player's individual qualities and what they need to get the best out of them. I think that's a good trait that a manager has to have, and I think Gary's finding that balance at the minute, and hopefully it'll come to fruition soon.
Are you a good watcher of games when you're not able to play?
I'm a good watcher in the fact that I won't moan about the lads, because I know how tough it can be. I know sometimes we're not going to play well, and I won't go, oh, he should be doing this and he should be doing that. But I do get nervous because, like I've said, touched on it before, I want to do well. I want as many things on my CV at the end of my career that I can get. And so I want us to be successful. And yeah, I'll be rooting the lads on for the next few months until I can start getting involved. But I'm really looking forward to the season, even though, I ain't going to be playing for a while. But I'm excited about what the club's ambitions are at the minute.
Before you joined Ebbsfleet, obviously you spent 4 or 5 seasons in League One. How does that level compare to the National League, which I guess is effectively a professional division now as well, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I think it's fair to say that the quality in League One's probably better, which is only probably fair enough the way the leagues have gone up, because if you went from League One to the Premiership, you'd notice a massive difference again. But I think a lot of the players in the National League are ex-Football League players, a lot of them. I'd probably say 50% of them are probably, like myself, older players, experienced players that are dropping through the league. So, yes, it's a lot more physical, I think. There's a lot more longer ball and fighting for the ball. But I must admit, when I first signed there, I was pleasantly surprised with the quality of it. But I think it's only natural that every league you go up, it gets better and better, which I think is only a fair comment. But yeah, I've really enjoyed my time there so far. And like I say, I'm just itching to get myself fit and get back out there and show what I can do.
One thing, once we knew you was coming on the podcast, I did want to find out as well, was last summer, obviously you're waiting to find a club, and you found a home at Ebbsfleet well into the season, but your name was continuously linked with Billericay.
Yeah.
Was there ever anything in that?
No, never. I think people just put things together. Obviously, I'm 20 minutes from Billericay. Never had a call from anyone at Billericay, never spoke to anyone at Billericay, nothing. So, and at that time of my career, I'll be honest, that wouldn't have been an option that I was really looking at. So I still felt that I had a little bit to offer full-time football. They've obviously done unbelievable, and I wish them well for the future. Who knows, I might need them in a couple of years. At the minute, no, there was no contact, and so that's really that, really.
Brilliant. We'll move on to the quick-fire questions. Off with it. The best goal you've ever scored?
It's got to be the overhead kick against Walsall just outside the box for Gillingham.
Favourite ground you've played at?
The Emirates or Wembley. I'd probably lean towards the Emirates just because I'm an Arsenal fan.
Oh really? Not Wembley? Yeah, I thought you were going to lean towards Wembley.
No, I've got to go Arsenal. Having been there so many times and wished and dreamt of playing there, I just think, when I actually played there, it was unbelievable. But the result wasn't great, but being an Arsenal fan, I took it not too bad.
We've spoken a lot about the strike partners you've played with, but who've been the toughest defenders you've come up against?
The one I used to not enjoy playing against, that Adam El Abd, and I ended up playing with him at Gillingham. And what a fight we used to have. He used to pinch ya, pull ya, push ya, tell you this, tell you that, and you're here and you're like, oh, you just go away, leave me alone. I used to try and get on the other defenders, but he'd just follow me. So he was a tough defender to play against, and I'd probably say Adam was probably in the Championship days when we played against each other. I think I was at Norwich and Coventry. I'd come up against him a few times, and he was horrible to play against.
Who over the course of your career made you laugh the most?
Dackie's quite funny, but in a stupid way. he's not the cleverest, bless him, but he was funny, and he was always pulling pranks. And Andy Bartram's good lad to be about as well. He's got a bit of banter. He's a great lad to have in the dressing room. But them two probably stand out for me.
And which of your teammates would pick up the most fines, and what were they for?
Corey Whiteley was quite a nightmare last year, being late in that. He picked up a few fines.
His name has cropped up before.
Has it with him?
A debut mention, I'm afraid.
Keds may have nominated him. But,
did he?
Serial latecomer.
Yeah. Well, not serial, but I just think he was so laid back that he didn't want to be late, but just occasionally he'd turn up late. So he was the one that got fined the most last season, I think.
Do the players run that? Is it, does the manager say you're fine?
With match days and training, that's managers, staff. Run that side of it, but just little ones in and around the dressing room, like no flip-flops or anything like that. That's more player-based and sets up a nice little drink at Christmas.
Cody, the time has beaten us again. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast. Really enjoyed the last hour listening to your stories, the highs and the lows occasionally in your career. We wish you the best of luck getting back to full fitness this season. Hopefully you'll be banging the goals for Absolute before we know it.
Thank you very much. Cheers for having us.
Thanks for listening to the KM Football Podcast. Click subscribe at Audio Boom and iTunes and keep up to date with the latest stories at kentonline.co.uk.